So as a pastor, part of my job is to get to know people. I learn names, what they do, and what their story is through questions, comments, and a lot of words. But there are parts of who we are where words aren't enough. We're not just talking heads. We've got bodies that have a language all their own. And this language speaks a little when we worship together. Before the service begins and we say hello to each other, I learn quickly who prefers a firm handshake and who likes a hug and a kiss on the cheek. As I process down the center aisle at the start of worship, I noticed who sings loud, who closes their eyes and sways to the beat, and who just silently follows along. And when we commune together at the rail, I learn how each person holds their hands, who likes to wink and smile as they receive Jesus, and who keeps their head bowed in meaningful reverence. There isn't only one way to worship, and there isn't only one way to be a person of God. Being part of a community of faith means being one speck of color, one speck of uniqueness inside Christ's kaleidoscopic body of believers. And like a kaleidoscope, we need a variety of colors, a variety of personalities, and a variety of faith-filled people to fully see the picture that God paints. The words we share, the tears we shed, the memories we make together, and the ways our bodies move. All of who we are matters to God, and all of who we are makes a difference in this church and in this world. Today's reading from John is the start of Jesus' farewell discourse. It's called that because that's exactly what it sounds like. Jesus is in John's version of the Last Supper, and he's just washed the disciples' feet. They keep eating, family style, I imagine, passing small plates around and talking about what has come before and what they think will happen next. And it's then in the meal when Jesus' words come. The disciples have no idea what's going to happen next, but Jesus does. In the gospel according to John, Jesus is always in control. He's always one step ahead. He knows how his life and his death will play out. But Jesus also knows that his disciples aren't him. They have a vision of tomorrow, a vision of the future that doesn't match what God is about to do. So Jesus begins this long speech, a speech that will stretch out for 3 chapters. He uses his words to say farewell, but he's not saying goodbye. He's promising his disciples that the love they share, the relationship that unites them together, won't be broken by what comes next. The death Jesus will experience, the death that the disciples will see, the death that will feel so total and complete. That won't be their final word. Jesus and the disciples have so much more in store for them. So the discourse begins with this image of a giant mansion full of many rooms. What do we think it looks like? For me, this image brings to mind old stately hotels or maybe one of those gigantic places I've been to, like something we find on a boardwalk in Atlantic City or at a resort in Florida. But the rooms in those places celebrate sameness. Each room has the same kind of bed, the same kind of pillows, the same kind of wall art, and the same kind of TV bolted to the top of the dresser. When I hear Jesus tell his disciples that he is preparing a place for them, that Jesus is preparing rooms for them in God's heavenly house, I don't believe Jesus is preparing the same kind of room for each of them. I can't imagine that Peter the fisherman and Mary Magdalene like exactly the same thing. To those he loves, Jesus grabs them at their very beginning, even before they've heard Jesus' story. To those washed in the waters of baptism, Jesus seals his kiss on them to say that you are mine forever. Jesus knows his own because that's who Jesus is. Jesus' death and our death can't end that relationship because there's nothing in heaven or on earth that can interfere with God's promise and God's love. So if I try to imagine Christopher's heavenly room, I imagine that it's got its share of jet skier hanging on the wall and a bowling alley in the back. Every once in a while, he lets his love of the Beastie Boys shine through and bowls to the sounds of Brass Monkey blasting through God's heavenly halls. I imagine his room is filled with all the places and things that brought him joy. Bits and pieces of the house upstate, Hilton Head, Florida, deep caverns, and the pool. He's surrounded by all six seasons of The Walking Dead, looking forward to the seventh that's about to come. And he can't wait to see what happens next in WWE. I imagine he's in a room of joy, because my experience of Christopher was always one of joy. When he smiled with his whole body. That was his language. And it didn't matter if it was during the passing of the peace or at the communion rail or saying goodbye at the end of a service. Christopher carried his love and his joy on his sleeve. That love and joy was palpable, right there in the open, and when we ran into it, we were impacted. We were changed. We were made better because Christopher loved. That's his eternal gift to all of us. A gift that will never end because that love, that holy love, is rooted in our God above. We are blessed because Christopher blessed us. And we know that his joy, his love, and everything that made Christopher who he is now basking in the eternal light of our glorious Lord forever and ever. Amen.